everybody. This is William Del Pilar, your favorite conservative Latino. I'm here for another week to talk about culture and politics. I don't always talk politics and culture. Sometimes it's fun to just talk games, movies, entertainment, but I've been on a roll. Man, I'll admit, I had some great pleasure in bringing you Snow White and the flop it became that everybody predicted it would. But more importantly, telling you why it happened, what Disney needs to do to change their ways, how you can fight back as well is also important. And that's what this show is all about. And I want to be honest, I think this is the second show I've had with a guest. Technically, I would call it it's the second guest, but in reality, it's the first guest because our first guest was my fired up co-host. So this is a different person. He's been in gaming development for over 20 years. He's kind of mysterious. When I first came across him, I was like, holy shit, that guy's got a cojones the size of King Kong. He's got this deep baritone voice. And I just immediately reached out and said, dude, you belong on radio with his voice. And then I started following him. He aligns. I don't know if he aligns perfectly with what my beliefs are, but he aligns somewhat. And he was a game developer. And as y'all know, I talk about gaming a lot, not necessarily as a gamer. I still game, but not like I did in the past, but more about culturally what's happening in the gaming world. And I want to pick his brain on what he thinks as a developer. He's built a couple of games I saw. So he's going to tell us a little bit about himself. But then, before we get to the gaming section of the show, though, he's going to be part of the whole show. We're going to talk Jimmy Kimmel. Y'all know how I feel about Jimmy Kimmel. He's a fraud in terms of being a parrot, just chirping the Democrat mantra. And we're also going to talk about a Gene Hackman update and Star Wars. Star Wars is, look, I was telling Tony off screen, hey, I stood in line to see the original. I don't know. I think they call it Star Wars Episode 6. And the first three films, that's it. Start and end Star Wars for me there. But Star Wars is an industry unto itself, and it is extremely popular. But it's gone woke over the last few years, as Disney has. Disney has, their market cap has dramatically dropped, and they don't seem to understand why. Actually, I apologize. They do know why. They just don't seem to care. But eventually, I think they're reaching that breaking point. the Snow White flop put a stop on some of their projects. Their Star Wars failures has put a stop on some of that. So I think we're reaching a breaking point. But it's Star Wars convention season. There's a name for it. And this year's being held in Japan. Big news has come out. But we're going to discuss if Star Wars is dead. And then from there, y'all know me. This is Red, White, and Rude. It's culture and entertainment. I grew up reading about the paranormal with UFOs, Bigfoot. I'm a wannabe believer. I'm like, gotta show me the proof, but I want to believe, you know. But with the government coming out showing Tic Tacs and things like that, something's happening. But I'm also a big I don't know what the term is, but I love reading about old civilizations and discoveries. And they discovered another ancient building, temple. And the reason I wanted to talk about this is, in today's America, we kind of put every other culture as these nice, kind people. And I'm like, it's far from it. You know, and my whole take is, let's just teach history so we don't repeat it. Let's study it so we don't make those mistakes. Instead, we try to whitewash it. We try to sit there and say, America all bad, America racist, America bigoted, America evil. Yes, we have all of that. Those traits. And we need to learn from that and grow as we are as human beings so we can advance as a strong nation. And I fear we are losing that. But I got news for you people. America is no different than the Roman Empire, you know, than the Byzantine Empire, than the Greeks who founded democracy. We're no different than the Chinese who gave us that ever popular gunpowder. So my point is, human nature transcends humanity. But I want to talk about this discovery and what they discovered about it. But then we're going to go to gaming. And with that, after my long-winded introduction here, let me bring you. And no, he is not undercover. He is not a whistleblower. He just doesn't quite have the lighting yet for his studio. So let's welcome Mr. Tony. Tony, how you doing, brother? Hello.
I'm good. Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Well, Tony,
am I coming in?
Yes, you are coming in loud and clear. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your company, how long you've been doing this, so the audience knows who they're
Okay. Yeah, no problem. Well, I've been a graphic designer. I started off as a graphic designer in 2005 professionally. And then, you know, I went to school for graphic design. And then after I had clients, I took care of, you know, websites. I took care of many businesses, you know, with brochures, business cards, flyers, websites. And you know, I was doing that, you know, had that going, but then I started getting kind of depressed because I was like, I'm making all this stuff for everybody else. What about me? I'd like to make some. So right. I taught myself how to code and, learn Visual Basic, you know, started off real simple. And I knew a little HTML and Java. So I was like, well, I'll take a little bit further. Next thing you know, I learned C# once I got into Unity. So 2014-ish is when I got into Unity. So I started off doing Android apps and iPhone apps, and, you know, it was fun. It was cool. Then, you know, I realized, you know, I'm getting older. I mean, you know, I'd like to make a video game. This is my passion, you know, like I need to make a game. Let's get away from apps. So I pretty much just let my app career go into the toilet. Because it's hard to do both. It's hard to be an app developer and a game developer at the same time.
Right.
So, and, you know, I nuked a lot of my stuff, so a lot of my stuff isn't even available anymore, you know. But I got a couple things out there still. But, you know, our passion has been to build this game called Crescent Hollow, and it's an action RPG. And it's 2D, but it has depth. It has character. And, you know, it's only a three-man team. My wife and our best friend, Jenny. Jenny I went to school with in college, so it's really cool because to have her with me is really awesome. You know, she's an amazing artist. And without her, I don't think I would even want to do this, you know, like go this far, I should say, with it. But we also work for another studio. It's called BTU Games, and we're working on a third-person action RPG shooter. Yeah, and it's being made with Unreal Engine 5. Now, I can't really disclose any details because, you know, we're kind of under an NDA. So, but I can say little details here and there. But right now I'm working on modular buildings, sci-fi modular buildings, which is pretty tricky stuff. There's depth to it. It's not like you're just making like a medieval ancient wall, you know, which actually takes less time and energy. So these are curvatures, you know, rounded, lots and lots of details inside of it. So it's been quite the journey. And my wife, she works for the studio as well. So we work with other studios, and we are our own. We're independent as well. So we're at that point in our career where we're comfortable with working with other studios. You know, we have enough experience.
Let me ask you a question.
So
when I hear you talk, I'm like, wow, the gig economy has even hit gamers, meaning you're working for yourself, but you're working for other companies. Is it difficult to get to latch on to an actual studio like EA or Ubisoft or Microsoft, you know, one of those? And granted, I say those in general because they all have subsidiaries below them. But is what you're doing and how you're doing, is that preferable, or would you rather be working like for a big studio? I guess what I'm asking is the job security or the freedom? You know, how's that play out for you?
For me, it's definitely the freedom. But, I mean, doing everything on your own has got its own challenges, and it can be tough. And there's times where I wanted to work for other studios. And when I lived in Colorado, I wanted to move to Boulder, and I wanted to work for some of the studios there. But we ended up leaving Colorado and, you know, whatever. So that didn't play out. But then we seen how crazy woke the gaming industry turned. And I got to I got to the point where I said, you know what? I'm proud to be indie. I'm proud to be a little peon, pissant nobody. Okay. Cause that's what I am. I'm a nobody in the grand scheme of things. And that's fine. You know, cause I'd rather work with studios like I am right now that I trust, people who are working on really good projects, something that's powerful, something that has potential, you know, and that's where I landed in, which is great because I wanted to work for smaller things and just sell assets here and there, but, you know, just to give back to the industry. But I've put all that on hold, and I'm just working with this team. It's a team of about 15 people, so it's not tiny, it's not huge, so that's fun. But the cool thing is everybody's either moderate or conservative. There's no liberals. We are straight up based. We're all based game devs. And pretty much all the game devs I've connected with on X, I've made a lot of friends, like game dev friends on X, which is so cool. In the last 5 months, it's been mind-boggling how many people I've interacted with and how many spaces I've been in, either hosting or co-hosting. Me and homie Santo, we were like besties in a way, I love him. We love Albert Gregel. He's from Croatia. He works on Roman stuff. He's a Roman expert, so all of his game stuff is hardcore ancient Roman stuff. I don't even know half the stuff he's talking about. It's funny. But it's just people like that are awesome up-and-coming developers, it's not always about the big guy, It's like we can sit here and talk about Grums all day long. We can talk. I know three vets, I know three vets. And they're all cool. They're awesome. And I think, I'll give a shout out to Cryptic Havoc. He is probably one of the coolest dudes that I've ever met, period. And he is a game dev veteran. He worked for THQ, which is now gone. But I think they dissolved.
Why do I think of Monolith when I think of THQ?
Yeah, I think there's a connection there, I think. But he worked for – he's retired, but I kind of talked him into getting back into development. So I feel like I did a thing. he's downloading Unity, and he's learning, and I'm going to help him with some things if he needs it or, whatever. But it's really interesting, when the way things go down, when you interact with – because I was always the kind of guy that didn't want to talk to other developers, didn't want to interact with anybody. I was that way for years. I was just so recluse and very antisocial. And I'm not that way in real life. I'm not that way in real life, but just with the internet and everything, but the whole thing is like Grums, I swear to God, it is Grums' fault. He lit a fire under me and got me to get into this fight.
Tell the audience who Grums is so they know who you're talking about.
Oh, sorry. That would be Mark Kern. He is the former lead at Blizzard for World of Warcraft and StarCraft. He worked on those two games. He also created a game called Firefall. And Firefall is very near and dear to me and my wife because we played it in beta and we played it at post-beta. So that game was always very, very, very fond memories is what we have. And he's working on a game that is going to be basically Firefall 2.0, and it's called Ember, but of course they're going to change the title because that's just a working title. But his fight against the wokies is what got me to just get up and do something, because I was behind the scenes, I was getting more and more angry about everything that was happening in the industry, and I got to the point where I just snapped, and I said, so I made, I went and I made Make Gaming Great Again community on X just as an experiment. And next thing you know, Grums joined, 8-Bit Eric joined, Yellow Flash joined.
Now, what is it?
Abbott joined, lots of really cool people joined. And I'm like, well, this is really cool.
Tony, what is this again?
It's just a community. It's a movement. It's basically, whenever you see Elon Musk or Grums post, Make Gaming Great Again, it's kind of like, it's like a movement. It's a thing, It's like they're not supposed to be a leader, even though I'm considered a leader in the movement. But I've told everybody, I said, I don't want to be the lead guy. You are all leaders in this movement.
But is there a place that you guys converse, or is this like a group?
We have a Discord. I didn't make the Discord. It was our good friend Azrael from New Zealand who made the Discord. And I told him, I said, you go ahead and run the Discord. That's cool. I'll run the community. And you're a mod, by the way, and da-da-da. And we were really, everything was great. And then he's like, oh, I'm getting really busy with work. And they promoted me. And, oh, you're the server owner now. And I'm like, okay. So now I run the server. I run the Discord and the community. Great.
So you're really immersing yourself deep into this. And that's good.
That's very serious.
Question you made, too, because you're going to lose a lot of woke friends. When I came out as conservative, I talked to one of my old contacts at Yahoo. He goes, dude, you'll never work in this industry again. And sure enough, I lost about 100 of friends. I mean, they stopped following me on X. and a couple of them won't return my call. And some of these people, let's see, there's one that works for an NFL team. There's one that works over at one of the television studios. There's another one that works at one of the sports conglomerates. They won't. It's as if I have ceased to exist. And when you said, when you said I was getting angry, I was like, you know what? I never asked for anything. But your fear is because of me. And this is how you treat people who help you because I disagree with your politics. I go, at the end of the day, you're cowards. And that's what gets me angry is you get this little mob mentality. It's like, especially with the younger kids. I'm not blaming younger kids. What I'm saying is don't preach to me when you're 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, even in your mid-20s now until you get a job, until you pay bills, until you get out of mama's basement. You know, a friend of mine is saying, you know, learn how to wipe your ass before you get it. You know, meaning gain a little bit life experience before you go out there dictating. So I get angry. I'm like, yeah, in a perfect world, I'm with you, brother. But we don't live in a perfect world. You're going to have this person, that person. But who made you God? Who made you to have the final word? You who still live in a mama's basement, you know, who haven't paid a bill. You don't even know what the hell FICA means. You know, so
yeah.
So there's a sacrifice you make, but I think we've toughened up. I think the gaming industry is the very first industry that has learned how to fight back, meaning boycotts work. And Ubisoft, for example, is they're owned now by a Chinese company, Tencent, not technically, but for all intents and purposes, because they went completely woke, completely broke. And when they started that journey, as other companies did, we were still buying those games. And eventually we realized, why am I going to pay $60 to be indoctrinated? For me, it was Far Cry 5. I think it was Far Cry 5 or 6. The one where they had you went to the compound, the preppers. I don't know. It had that actor from Breaking Bad played the bad guy, Gino Esposito. I can't remember his name, but that's what did it for me. At that point, I was like, no, I'm not going to buy any more of this crap, you know? And I got to be honest, I haven't bought a game since then. But what I did do is I did sign up for like EA's two game or free game giveaways, Amazon's. I get some free games that I got because I have a job. I have a life. And I got to be honest, Tony, I got like 400 games I'll probably never play. There's only one. I wouldn't even buy Halo anymore. Because I didn't own the Xbox 5, whatever it was, when their Halo Infinite came out. And I'm like, I want to play it in order, you know? And so it's not even on PC. So I'm like, you lost me as a fan there. So State of Decay, which was built by a small studio, and Microsoft bought them out, that's been the only game I play regularly now since 2018. And before that, since 2016 with the first one. So I think part of the problem is... Yeah. It's so big, so open world. We're no longer in an era where you can finish a game in a few hours and you're on to the next one. Now, it took me 8 months to finish Fallout 3, not because, again, because I have a job. I play a few times a week, 3 hours a day. My wife be, is anything on? No. So I jump on the map and play the game. She's on cat on the couch and I play. But gaming has changed completely. You're too young to remember. But I've been around since the 70s with the Amiga consoles, playing Star Trek, Asteroids on the computer, Pong. We all know the classic Pong. And I grew up around every console. And I got to be honest, Tony, I feel grateful. I believe my generation is the last generation who our parents had to open the front door and holler for dinner's ready because we're outside running around playing like urchins. And then we experienced the gaming revolution as teenagers. So we were still outdoors kids, experienced gaming. We had the best of both worlds. So I really feel bad for protective parents who don't let their kids out of their sight, out of the front yard, and they become these fat couch potatoes, you know? And the parents think, hey, yeah, there's your next gaming pro there. I'm like, no, it's just like football, like basketball. Only a handful of these kids are going to make it in these elite gamer leagues, you know? The rest of them are going to be fat couch potatoes. But with that said, let's get going. We could talk all day just off of gaming and life. So let's get going. On some of this topic, these topics. So the first topic is Jimmy Kimmel. For those of you not aware, you know, Jimmy Kimmel is obviously the longtime host of Jimmy Kimmel Live, but he comes under criticism every so often. He did an interview with the Rolling Stone, and the article I got this from was the Hollywood Reporter, but he talks about the Man Show. The Man Show was debauchery. It was male pigs at its finest. I was around when the Man Show came out. Everything that would get you fired and charged for sexual assault. They did on that show, and they were uber proud of it. And he's creating this revisionist history saying, yeah, yes, I did that, but it was satire. It was this, it was that, because now he wants to be seen as a Democrat champion. But the problem is, it's hard to stand up for women's rights when you were telling women in public, hey, please grab my cojones.
Yeah.
What they cut from the camera was when the woman said, where they at?
You know? I watched it. I'll admit, I watched it.
We all did. We were prepubescent teens. You know, we were like, you know, a fart joke we laughed at. You know, that was icing on the cake, watching a girl with big boobs and him say something that we all would always think of. See, here's Tony, what I say about human nature. We men, we're pigs. We do think those thoughts, but we're civilized and polite, and our mamas brought us up good enough to go, that's not how you talk or communicate. Women are the same way. I grew up with three sisters. I've heard private conversations, but we don't show those in public. We treat each other with respect, and he didn't. And Tony, here's my take on Jimmy, and then I want you to respond to this. Is he's creating revisionist history by saying that it's satire. But what he fails to get is he calls us hypocrites because he says we're calling him out on this stuff and saying and projecting ourselves. And I'm like, no, you're wrong. We're calling your hypocrisy at trying to be this person today when this is the person you've been all along. You're being hypocritical to yourself, to your audience, to everybody. We don't care that you did that. As a man, I get it. We were all there at one time. I don't care that you had the man show. I watched it. I laughed along with it. As an adult, I grew past that. Own it. We're not hypocrites. You're the hypocrite for trying to portray it a certain way versus the reality of what it was. What are your thoughts?
I think he's an insufferable POS. I think that he's one of the most pathetic little worms on TV. I mean, and he's clearly sold out to the left. I mean, hardcore. And he's compromised. I mean, the word is on the street is that, you know, he could be a, you know, a PDF file, if you know what I mean. You know, but you know, I mean, allegedly. But you know, he's compromised. I think that they've got so much on him that he's so deep in it, he can't reverse. There's no going back.
I got to be honest.
I mean, it's that. Really? What's that?
You know who Adam Carolla is?
Yeah, of course.
He is a staunch conservative now. During the fires, I think he stayed with Doctor with the glasses. He's kind of conservative. I forget his name, but he also hung out with Jimmy. They're still good friends. It's like, I wonder how that political conversation goes. I bet you they don't talk politics. But I'm
surprised they're friends.
I know. But for those of you wondering, the Man Show aired from 1999 to 2004 for about 5 years. Kimmel created it with Adam Carolla and the executive producer Daniel Kellison. ABC turned the pitch down when they heard it. But Comedy Central was starving for new content. It was a low-cost show. It was kind of like a male pig variety show. And I don't say male pig in a derogatory or any other way that when I say male pig, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But that's what it was, you know, from a factual basis. And it was popular, you know. It featured comedy sketches, live segments, celebrating and lampooning male chauvinism is what it did. With sexually charged content like the Juggy Dance Squad. Oh my God, that brings back memories. Scantily clad women who dance in intros and breaks. He says it's ironic that we bring that up. No, we bring it up to show his hypocrisy. Own who you are. He doesn't want to own it in full. He says it's satire. I remember, Tony, them being interviewed, and they're cracking up at all the guys being drunk, waiting in line, you know, loving it. They were eating it up because it made them stars, male chauvinistic stars. Now they're like, well, they didn't understand it was satire, so we didn't understand what their problem. It's like, just own it. You're right. I think he's a worm. That fits Jimmy Kimmel to a T. He's the worm. Jimmy Kimmel, you said something earlier in your introduction, and it clicked that, you know, we're all forgotten. We're all on this earth for a moment's time. The Julius Caesars, the George Washingtons, the Lenins, the Hitlers, I mean, big names in history, not good or bad, but just names that will be remembered in history. I mean, there have been trillions of humans that have lived, and only a handful will be remembered for both good and bad. And I always tell people, don't worry about your legacy. Just try to be a good person, live your life, and be happy if you can help somebody along your journey. And that's how I look at life. I look at people like Kimmel. He clings on to that. But this is his last year, his contract. I think he's done. And my point being is, once he leaves that show makes him a star because it's on ABC. It's featured in a prime slot, you know, late night television. But once he leaves that, he'll be forgotten like Conan O'Brien. Nobody knows who the hell Conan O'Brien is. You still see him being put up there on certain guest hosts here for this event or that event, but he's largely forgotten. And that's not good or bad. But the point being for Jimmy Kimmel, enjoy it while you can, because after this year, you're done, gone, and forgotten, because his impact, there's nothing impactful that he's doing that's changing or turning the tide. He's just, as you said, just another voice. A parodying the left. Any final thoughts before we move on from the worm? I like that. The worm.
He's a worm. He's a pathetic little. There's so many things I want to say about him. I'm trying not to go.
Yeah, it just boggles my mind. If I ever met Adam Carolla, and you know, he actually came to San Diego. I'm out here in San Diego.
Adam's cool.
Just this past week, and I didn't go see him. But if I ever get the opportunity, I just want to ask, and I'm sure millions of others have either asked him or thought the question is, how can you be friends with Jimmy Kimmel? You know, he hates us. He views all of us as racist, ignorant, uneducated bigots. And I look at him as, you're an elitist. You're no different, you know? And then what I loathe about people like him, when his daughter had the heart surgery, heart thing, I mean, he was crying for ratings there. I'm like, dude, that's a private moment. I get it. Tell us. But you're kind of like milking it now, you know? And then he did it to Ben Shapiro when they were arguing, you know, talking about healthcare. Well, I have a daughter. Ben's like, so do I, but you don't see me hollering it all over there, waiting for attention. You know, I mean, that's not how it went down, but that's kind of how it came across. So I'm not a big Shapiro fan, but I applauded him for that, because what they try to do is, when you push back, they play the victim. And Jimmy, that's why your term, he's a worm, is so perfect, because when you push back, he's a victim. Jimmy Kimmel is a worm, an inchworm in every way. When he makes love to his wife, it's in the Amazon position. That's how much of a man he is now. Yeah. Sorry, people. Ex-sailor in me coming out. If you don't know what that is, don't worry about it. Any final comments on Jimmy before we move on?
No. I think we covered enough. I don't want to puke.
All right. So let's get to a sad story here. I want to get your thoughts on this, because it makes absolutely zero sense to me. Rodent infestation found at Gene Hackman's property after hantavirus death. Now, this is old news. What makes it relevant, it's been confirmed with the autopsies. This is what was suspected. I got this out of CNN, of all places. But so, you know, what's funny, Tony, it opened up with the tragic deaths of actors. I'm like, the guy was 90-some-odd years old. I mean, he was going to go. It's like, you know, he had dementia. I worked that industry in a previous life. It was a blessing. And anybody who will tell you, one of the hardest things for people to accept is they're sad and they play the sad part publicly. But deep down, it's one of the biggest reliefs, not because they don't have that burden, but because their loved one now is free from the burden that their body put on them. You know, I view Gene Hackman as he started his current journey, his spiritual journey, whatever it is, based off his religion or whatnot, or what happens is after death. So I don't know if I view it as tragic, because I view it as a rebirth, I guess, as corny as that sounds. But what is tragic is his wife, Betsy Arakawa. She was only in her 60s. And they lived in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The New Mexico Department of Public Health assessment revealed a rodent infestation. They linked that to Arakawa's death from the Hantavirus pulmonary syndrome. It's a rare virus, but it can be caught from rodent to human. And it's a sad tale because their house, they were like hoarders. It was rat infestations everywhere. Now, Tony, this guy's worth $80 million. No gardener, no home care person, no nothing. She's in her 60s caring for somebody in their 90s who has full-blown Alzheimer's or dementia like he did. That's, she can't do it alone. So I guess, what are your thoughts when you hear this? Somebody worth $80 million. It's not like they're struggling. Can we afford the housekeeper this week? You know, they could have afforded a whole handful of live-in housekeepers. I mean, what goes through your mind when you hear of a senseless death like this? And, I mean, I'm sorry, but the first thing that comes to me, were they that cheap? I mean, what's the issue here? Your thoughts.
I do remember recalling hearing something about didn't they both pass together or something?
She passed a few days before him.
Before,
and,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And Gene Hackman had full-blown dementia, which means he was literally a child, you know.
Yeah, I was. I heard all that. I didn't know about the rat thing, though. That's really crazy to me. Yeah, when you're that rich, you think, it'd be easy to keep the place. They probably were recluse, though. A lot of these celebrities, when they get older, I've noticed they disconnect, you know, from the world. And they said that's what I remember hearing that's what they said that him and his wife did, is they just kind of just recluse people, didn't want to be around nobody no more. And which makes sense. I mean, Hollywood has a way of just taking people and just sucking the life out of them. And then they're like, okay, you know what? I'm done. I'm out. You know, so it makes sense. I mean, you know, from that perspective.
They say he loathed the limelight. They lived as recluses for the last few decades.
So yeah, that's what I hear, yeah. Right.
But there comes a point where you get help when you're that rich. I mean, you can still be a recluse, but have help come to the house. And I guess it irks me because it's a tragedy that did not need to happen. You know, there's like no excuse for it. And so that, I guess it doesn't irk me. It saddens me. It's like I am a hardcore individual in how I look at people. And we all judge people, but I always judge people and hope they can change or hope they change for the better. I don't have that permanent stigma on them. But so I have no issues, good or bad, about the Hackmans. But it just saddens me because it didn't need to be. I guess what I'm trying to say is the humanity in me is like, why? Come on. You didn't have to die at 62 years old, Arakawa. And that's what saddens me, a needless death. And now the state's going to be up. They have the money allotted to go to charities or something, and the kids are going to be fighting now for it, you know? So there's that. You know, your thoughts about money in the will. I mean, I don't know if you have kids, but if you win the lottery and everybody wants to take care of their kids, but, man, they must have been estranged, too, that have been living as recluses and not have their kids in the will. Any thoughts on that?
That's an interesting point. I don't know how close their kids were to them, so I don't really know what to expand on that. But
it's just sad.
Well, and it's always sad when we lose one of the good ones. I mean, there's Hollywood elites that are complete trash, and they've done bad things, and we don't need to repeat those things here. People can go figure that out on their own if they don't know what we're talking about. But it does sadden me when the good ones pass, you know, and because we need them. We really do. We need the good ones. We need them to stand up. We need them to speak out. And not everybody in Hollywood is evil. You know, not everybody in Hollywood is some, crazy, you know, leftist and all this stuff. And but, you know, I've gotten to the point in my life where I guess as I've gotten older, where I just detached myself from Hollywood so much that I don't really feel anything one way or another, you know, anymore. It's just like the gaming industry, you know, the AAA gaming industry. It's like detached myself from that, too, you know. But I do pay attention and I do like to, keep track of things that are important, you know, so.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's funny. I was the NFL Network's first fantasy football analyst. So I did some TV, some of the first startup TV shows doing fantasy football. I was a guest on those. So I got my little bit of time. And it's cutthroat.
yeah.
In fact, the producer who hired me, I won't say his name, but he later came under scrutiny, was hired during the Me Too movement. Turned out him and a couple others were abusive of the power dynamics, and they didn't do anything sexual, with a woman, but the male, it was the man show type scenario is the environment the girl was in. And when all that came out during the Me Too movement, they canned him. And I wasn't unsad because they were ruthless people. They used us and we got out of it what we wanted. But I kind of ended the relationship, not purposely. I wish I had done a couple things different. But at the end of the day, not all people in Hollywood are bad. I didn't make great friends there, but I met some great people, met a lot of great players down to earth. You immediately change your tune. I don't know if you're aware of who Jim Everett is. I wrote a former quarterback for the LA Rams. And a lot of people in the industry knew me. You know, I was famous because I was one who ran one of the – at one point, Tony, my website was ranked in the top 2,000 in the world in traffic. You know, that's how – so agents, players, they all knew who I was. And I did a scathing report on Jim Everett, you know. And then I saw him online, and it brought back – some memories that I was ashamed of how I treated him. Because I got a little older, I understood, you know, at the end of the day, this guy's an elite player. There's only a handful of players to play in the NFL. So I wrote him a letter stating what I had done, and I'm older now, how it was so wrong, and I wanted to apologize, even though he may never have seen it or heard of it, and he responded back, you know? Holy mackerel. But it felt good to at least admit. It was kind of like confession, I guess. You know, that admit my evil way. I didn't do anything bad. It's just sometimes we detach ourselves and we look down on people because we're not close to the situation. And what you said about Hollywood, that's my first thought, is these are people who are rich and they're so detached and they judge everybody who disagrees with them as you're vile, you're evil. Jimmy Kimmel, he's very rich now, well off, and he lives in his gated community, his ivory towers, and he judges us differently. And he doesn't have to deal with the lifestyles that we live. And Gene Hackman was one of the good ones, a great actor. What's your? You have a favorite movie from Gene Hackman?
Well, what's that famous one he's in? I'm drawing a blank.
A bunch of the French Connection.
I know. I have watched a lot of his films, but I it's been a while actually since I've watched one of his films.
Well, here's the problem.
I'll tell you,
Gene Hackman was rarely the leading man. He was always a great supporting actor who stole the show in a lot of different movies. Like he was in The Firm, for example, State of with Will Smith. So he's one of those guys where you know who he is, you know his face, but you don't really remember the movie. But you just develop this overall belief for the man because he's so good and you see him in so many things. But I think he won an Oscar for The French Connection back in the early 70s, like 72, 74, something like that. So he's been around for a while. All right.
He has.
Yeah. So let us move on then. Let us move on to something that you've dealt with, not maybe directly, but the impact of Star Wars in the gaming world has been huge. Star Wars is having their 2025 celebration. It's Star Wars Celebration Japan 2025. It's a global fan event that showcases major Star Wars announcements, debates about whether the franchise is dying, though. That's the talk of the Star Wars world right now. And that's because a lot of fans believe Disney has not done it justice. I got news for you people. I don't think George Lucas, its creator, did it justice with those long, boring sequel trilogies. Tony, true story. I was all excited about the first trilogy. Went to the movies with the wife. I was always ragging on her, honey, you got to stay awake. This movie, halfway through, I fell asleep.
Really?
I fell asleep. That was the one that they mocked Jabba the, whatever his name was, Jabba, not Jabba the Hutt, the one that they said was a racist stereotype. Had long ears, looked like a donkey maybe.
Jar Jar Binks?
Yeah, Jar Jar Binks. Jar Jar Binks. But anyway, it's a big celebration.
Jar Jar is still cooler than Rey.
Yeah, there you go. But before we get into that, you're a gamer. Give me your thoughts on Star Wars Outlaws.
Oh, boy. Yeah, okay. I've got some choice words for that.
And
yeah,
for the audience, Star Wars Outlaw is a game done by a conglomerate, Ubisoft.
Ubisoft.
That came out a few months ago, and it did not hit any of its milestones. Your thoughts on the game?
No, I don't like any of the new Star Wars games. I have almost all of the classic Star Wars games on my shelf, my PC shelf in my living room. And because we're collectors too, we collect collect retro games. So I have a lot of old Star Wars games. I love them. Jedi Knight, Jedi Academy. These games now are nothing like Jedi Knight, Jedi Academy, or Knights of the Old Republic, or, you know, let's say Rogue Squadron, for example. This Outlaws thing is, when I first seen it, I thought that was terrible. Just from the trailer, I said, you know, I'm not playing that. I don't want nothing to do with that.
So as a developer,
the one before it, too, was crap. So, I mean...
Which one was that?
Oh, the one with the Shameless kid in it. I forget the name of it. But the Shameless, you know, the Shameless show? Showtime show?
No, Showtime, I shouldn't say that.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of it. But that one looked terrible to me, too. And yeah, it did good. It did well, actually. It did okay. My friend liked it. He said, oh, it's good. You should play it. I said, you know I don't play any of these new Star Wars games. What are you talking about, dude? I have played Battlefront 2. I have Battlefront 2 on Xbox, and I played it a little bit here and there. But they just don't have the energy. They don't have the magic that they used to have. You know, they're not anything like what I have on my shelf. You know, I'll go play those old ones. I'll go play them right now, you know, if I have time. But, I haven't bought a Star Wars game since the early 2000s, to be honest.
Well,
it's been a long time. Well, sorry, I did buy Battlefront 2.
Well, I go back to X-Wing from the late 90s.
Yeah. X-Wing, that was the beginning of Rogue Squadron, was these X-Wing and TIE Fighter. And my wife remembers that because she grew up with those. And she had a Commodore 64 growing up, which was kind of rare for girls. Yeah, her father worked for IBM, so therefore she was kind of like entrenched in the computer world at a young age. And she talks about those games all the time. She's like, oh, yeah, the X-Wing, the Rogue Star, that was the beginning of Rogue Squadron, huh? And I was like, yeah, that was the very start of it.
Let me ask you this question. I'm going to digress here for a moment, but I think it's terrible. I understand the concept. You want everyday people in TV, movies, and all that. But at the end of the day, we go to movies and we play games because they're fantasies. They're fake. They're like, you know, we get to be the hero, the star, and there's a certain image. And I don't need oversized boobs or butts or like the Japanese manga does at times. But I would like to see pretty people, whether it's a man that I'm like, damn, I wish I had abs or arms like that, or damn, that man is too good looking, or damn, she's hot. You know, and there's a place for it. I one of those fighting games, I can't remember which one, I rented for my kids, and I saw the costume for some of the chicks. I'm like, oh, no, my six-year-old nephew cannot play this game. You know, so there's a place for
Dead
it.
Dead or Alive?
No. It's Dead or Alive? It came out, it was a competitor to Mortal Kombat. It was one of those. It was Capcom, I think, did this one. It has a whole long series of it. Beautiful women, fighting women on there. I just can't remember. I was never into fighting games, so that's why I was never got into Mortal Kombat or any of those, even though that was my heyday.
I used to. Yeah.
What's your take on what people call the uglification of gaming in terms of ugly female characters, because that is happening out there.
Yeah, and obviously me being a part of Make Gaming Great Again, my boys and the girls, they talk about this all the time. They do a really good job of covering this stuff a lot better than me because I'm busy, you know. But so I'm aware of all of this stuff because they're constantly sending it to me or posting it on the community. And the answer to it is already here, right? We have a solution to that, which is, you know, AAA games are combating that. So they're, you know, you have Stellar Blade, you have Nier Automata, you have a couple others that I can't remember, but it's crazy because these studios that have the potential to make great money on these games are just screwing up so bad. And then it's funneling everything, all of the energy and the resources and everything is being funneled into, like I said, like a double A kind of, like we have like a breakaway industry happening here with the
right
industry, which is crazy. I never would have thought that growing up. I would have never thought we'd be where we are right now. You know, I loved Ubisoft. I used to think that Ubisoft was one of the greatest companies. What do I mean by that? I'm talking about the Tom Clancy games. I own almost all of them. I'm trying to collect all of them because I'm crazy.
You'll get a kick out of this. I was around when he blew up with the Huffle Red October. I was in the military. You could not go into any military command without seeing somebody with the Huffle Red October paperback with the red. And here's the irony about Tom Clancy. All pro, conservative, all America, patriot, and now China owns his most famous gaming asset.
That's crazy. I know. That is so crazy. Oh, and
it's Soul Calibur.
Oh, yeah, I love Soul Calibur. I used to be a big fighter game guy. I don't play them anymore. I just don't have I just have no desire to play fighting games, period.
Exactly. So, I know. Yeah. Grow up. We're not kids. We have responsibilities now.
Yeah. And you know, I'm an RPG guy. I mean, if people want to, you know what I do, you know, gaming-wise, it's like, you know, I collect RPGs. I make RPGs. I love RPGs so much that I'm building one, all right? So, you know, it's something that I have. And you have to have a deep passion for RPGs in order to be able to build one,
Is Zork considered an RPG? Zork? Do you remember that game? I mean, you don't remember it. You weren't born. Or you're 40. No, you're 4, so you're probably a little kid. Zork was a first adventure game. You know, you are standing in front of a White House. Everything was typed in. Every command. It was extremely hard because you had to type in the commands, move north. Would that be considered an RPG game?
It was PC?
Yes. Zork. You never heard of Zork? Check it out when we got the air. It's a classic.
I know a lot of old games, but I don't know every one of them.
But Zork was one. It was massively popular. Millions of copies sold. It was created by MIT techs. Just they needed some. What is it saying? When you got to let the air out, when you got to cut loose, and so they built this little adventure game. And then from there it blew up, and there was Zork 1, 2, 3, 4, and Activision owns the brand now, and they made a couple of graphic Zork games afterwards that are pretty good. But it's kind of like an adventure game, you know. It's like you are in a dark room, you know. What are you gonna do? Or this something attacks you. So that's kind of how so I don't know, but I wish that would come back. So let's get to Star Wars.
Sounds like a MUD, right? Multi-user dungeon, or just beginning days of RPGs, where it was more text based.
Well, yes, that's exactly. Well, that's because in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, that's what you had. It was all text based, you know. Mm-hmm. So Star Wars, it's happening in Japan. They're coming out with Star Wars Starfighter with Ryan Gosling, the Mandalorian, and Grogu. So they're still throwing stuff out. There's a new Jedi Origin a movie coming out, Andor Season 2, Ice-Cola Season 2. These are all movies and games and series. I have no interest in seeing Star Wars, Maw, Shadow Lord. Now, for you, you may be aware, Star Wars Zero Company, that's a Clone Wars era turn-based tactics game. So that's where they make all their big announcements. So they've announced all these movies, all these shows. I had no interest because to me Star Wars went woke. I don't know if you're aware of the Acolyte series. Yes. So that begs the question for our discussion here. God. Is Star Wars a dying franchise, or have they just made one misstep after another? Now be aware, these missteps have cost them billions in either lost revenue in terms of movies gone bust, or they haven't maximized their product. How do you see this? Do you think they're dying? Do you think it's a misstep? Do you think there's still a future? Do you think it's oversaturated? What are your thoughts on it?
It's definitely becoming oversaturated with shows like Acolyte. That was unnecessary. It was very forced. It was very wokey. And sorry, my cat's being a terror. So we watched Ahsoka, we watched, of course, Mandalorian. It was good. I watched everything except for Acolyte. I even watched Andor. I watched Andor and it starts off really slow and then finally gets pretty darn good toward the end. I liked it. I thought it was cool. But my friend made a good point. One of them, he said, it was unnecessary to have a show for Andor just because, like, he was in, he was part of, forget the name of it, the one with Vader in it. And then he was like, "Well, I don't think they needed to make a show out of that." So I'm like, "Yeah, it's like they're milking it, man. They're doing everything they can to like fill in the gaps until episode 9, you know, episode 10 comes along." And who the hell knows what that's going to look like? That's going to be probably a complete mess. And it is dying. It is dying. I hate to say this, but it is. Everybody knows that it is a franchise that is very beloved and such an amazing, powerful universe, you know, that was created. But it's now probably going to continue to lose money until they remove the DEI woke crap from it. I mean, we're not going to see any kind of anything different. You know, people just like with the gaming industry, people vote with their wallets. People are non-binary, meaning I ain't buying it.
You know, I got to be honest. You know, I don't mind a strong woman, but I'm just sick and tired of 90-pound dripping wet women taking out 300-pound muscle-bound guys with ease.
Like, I noticed that. I noticed that with
that just happened to The Last of Us.
Mando, Mandalorian, they've got these girls, you know, basically when they run into Boba Fett, he basically, you know, there's a moment where they're like making him look like a buffoon, you know, and I told my wife, I said, "I don't like this scene. This is what I'm talking about. That's stupid," you know. She's okay. Like, "Yeah, you're right," you know. So, you know. Yeah.
Well, my issue is there's too many ugly videos. And when I say ugly, meaning you cringe when you look at it. You see women getting in the face of men. And we live in a very ugly society where men don't have man. I was bite up, you don't hit a girl or something like that. So you push them away or something like that. Where I've seen on video, you'll see these men just knock this woman. I saw this guy pick up this woman. He turned around and she tried to cock him on the side without her seeing her. He looked at her, picked her up, and body slammed. And you're like, "Oh my God." You knew that's hospital stuff. Her head hit, her back hit, and she's just laying still. And you see the leg twitch. You know? And I'm like, "Oh." And all the responses, "She shouldn't have messed with him. She shouldn't have done this." And I'm like, "Dude, you hurt her bad. I mean, yes, she assaulted you. They did this. But we just don't seem to have any decorum." And I think part of that, though, is because Hollywood is portraying women as you can take out this guy. You know, I was in the military. The seedy, ugly side of the military is alcohol. I have been involved in a lot of times. Oh, you grab the guy. "Dude, that's your wife." Because they're just going that, you know. And I'm like, I could only imagine it today where nobody's going to hold the guy back. You know, and my whole point is, there's a way you approach life and approach people, but those scenes bug me because I truly believe in my heart, women look at that, "I can take him out. I can take him out." And I'm like, "Lady, your punch isn't even going to affect him one iota, contrary to on television, you know?" And as far as the wokeness, the Acolyte, yes, it faced intense criticism because of the DEI cast. It was culture, non-binary. They laughed and they were promoting, "We're going to do all gay. If you don't like it, you don't have to watch it. We don't need you." Then they turn around after the show gets canceled. "Y'all are racist and bigots. You wouldn't support us." I'm like, you see the catch 22 there? So you think it is dying. What can save it?
What can save fire Kathleen Kennedy? I mean, you know, you've got...
Retiring.
How many times have we heard, you know, the Star Wars, you know, the people who cover Star Wars on YouTube, the YouTubers who cover it, they're right. Like if they don't get rid of Kathleen Kennedy, then the franchise will continue to just hurt in the toilet. And that's the only way. I don't know. I don't see any other solution. I mean, and if they replace her with another version of her, though, then you're just going to get more of the same. So,
I actually honestly think the problem with Star Wars, it was a one-time hit. And here's what I mean by that. With Batman, you're going to have tons of different actors because it's Batman. Superman, tons of different actors. It's Superman. You know, Wonder Woman. You know, the heroes. You can name them. You can fill those in with the right guy or the right woman. With Star Wars, they're trying to extend the lineage of the history of the show. But what made it famous? We fell in love with Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Han Solo, Chewie. And they kind of like I did not watch the third of the new trilogy with Daisy Ridley, whatever her name was. I saw the first one of the J.J. Abrams new trilogy. I was like, well, that's just a remake of the very first Star Wars that I stood in line for. I enjoyed it, but there was nothing original. J.J. Abrams has a history of doing that. He also did that with Star Trek. Then I saw the second one. And the first one, I'm like, man, you killed off Solo. I wanted to see Han Solo marry Princess Leia and retire in the old folks home. He's a hero who deserved a great ending. Instead, they kill him off. And then the second one, who I loathed Mark Hamill because his politics. When I saw Mark Hamill, I didn't see Luke Skywalker anymore. I saw Mark Hamill, the vile, evil little man who's just full of anger and vitriol. And then, but they killed him off too. You know, him disappearing. And I'm like, first of all, he was the Force. He's kind of like downplaying and crapping all over the Force all of a sudden in this movie. And they pass it on to a woman he's not even related to, if I remember correctly. And then I just saw it all grow apart. Look, this is the emasculation of the American male. I'm sorry, folks. We are a patriarchy society. Men have done a lot of bad. We've done a lot more good. Women can be just as vile as evil. Queen Isabella, who gave the money to Columbus to fund his trip, she started a lot of wars, too. So enough of that nonsense. But my point is, we fell in love with those characters. They've moved on that. They have not created a character that the masses have fallen in love with. And to me, that makes the whole Star Wars franchise a hollow franchise. You're going to make your name because it has a Star Wars name on it, but you're not going to get any love like you got those first three movies. The magic, as you said earlier for the other topic, the magic is not there. It's gone. Am I looking at this wrong, or what do you think of that thought process?
No, that's absolutely correct. The video games are dried up and boring. The shows are stupid. There's nothing there. It's not. And I used to love playing the games more than the show. Like, I was always, or the movies, or I was always one of those guys where it was like, yeah, I want to play Star Wars because I want to be in Star Wars. I want to be there. I want to, you know, I want to, like, that's so cool. I don't want to just watch the movies. I like the movies, but I was always more of a fan of the games. That's why I have a whole shelf of them. I would buy every single one that would come out. And then with the shows, We watched them, and we watched them, you know, to see what was going on, you know, with them, with the new stuff. Mandalorian was fun. I enjoyed it. I thought it was cool.
But look what they did there. They fired Gina Carano because she sat there and made a comment they disagreed with. And she's actually more than likely, I believe, going to settle out. And she may wind up back on The Mandalorian. Never say never. Elon Musk is funding her court case. And for the audience, she may...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she made what would be deemed conservative type comments. Nothing nefarious, nothing bad, and they fired her. Mm-hmm. Well, she's because they had this "we don't talk politics" or some stupid reason they gave. She's like, "Well, Pedro Pascal says all this stuff. You didn't do this. You didn't do that." So Elon Musk,
you can do whatever. Apparently,
Elon Musk funded her lawsuit and it's moving forward. Disney was sitting back, not giving the provided documents they were supposed to, and the judge just ordered, you will give them these documents. Because my take is they're cleaning it up. They're destroying everything of relevance. And there's a court date set up. Now, Disney has everything to lose here. And the winds of change are here. So I think Disney will smartly probably settle out of court. Any final comments on Star Wars before we move on? Outside of the games were better.
I don't have any faith in episode 10. I think that it's going to be terrible. There's no telling how they're going to botch it up. And I'm not looking. It's sad to say this, but I'm not. I don't even care. I'm not looking forward to episode 10 because it's. Oh God. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe it'll be okay. But I don't think so.
I'm in agreement. After the first three, the first trilogy, the sequel trilogy that predated, you know, the actual first three. It was boring, and I lost interest. That's when I realized I fell in love with the characters that were played with, combined with the actors who played them, and that's it. So I don't give a rat's tail what happens to Star Wars, to be quite honest. Not good or bad, meaning it's just my time when I was a little kid, the magic has disappeared since then. All right, let's talk about an ancient city. Tony, I'm into the Atlantis myth, the Ark of the Covenant being in Africa. I'm into all that, you know, being stolen to Jerusalem, David and Goliath, who was that big giant, because they describe him to a T, he's a giant, was he a Nephilim? So I get into all that type of stuff. In ancient history, ancient ruins as well, okay, they just discovered a temple, and I want to pronounce this, the ancient Teotihuacan altar was unearthed in Tikal. It reveals cultural interactions. Now, my point in this is, again, this is culture and politics, is we have this belief that liberals are teaching kids the Indians walked on water. When they tooted, it was Mother Nature version of fertilizer, and everything grew. I mean, that's how bad and pathetic, as they all loved one another. People don't realize Indians were cannibals eating one another. Certain tribes would eat the tribe they conquered. They would run. They were humane with how they hunted their animals. They would sit there and herd the bison to the cliff and force them off the cliff. I mean, my point being is they weren't vile or evil. They were no different than any other civilization out there. So when I saw this, and I used to never think like this. I used to like read it for what they were. This temple they had discovered, they believe, was for sacrificing children, more than likely virgin girls. It was found in central Mexico. The civilization was between 300 and 500 AD. This was found in Guatemala. But if the civilization was throughout central, what is now central Mexico, around 300, 500 AD. They're discovering these temples, these pyramids all over the jungle now because of LIDAR. The jungle covered everything. So for a time, we thought civilization was only in Africa, in Western Europe. Scientists used to say, because I've studied this as an amateur for a long time, no, nothing ever grew there. It was uninhabitable. They didn't know how to live there. Now LIDAR is showing all these lost civilizations. What are your thoughts in terms of the discovery that back then they were sacrificing children? And to give you an idea, to go one step further, they had an early version of basketball. It wasn't hoops. It was a round basket to get in. And they used to compete against each other. The losing team would be sacrificed. So what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts politically speaking in terms of we try to portray these civilizations of bygone eras, even recent ones, as holier than thou, and America's the most vile evil? When you see that, what's that make you think of as an American?
Well, I love talking about ancient stuff. I too dabble in the ancient world things. I know quite a bit about Atlantis and Agartha. I will admit I am somebody who believes in hollow earth. I'm not a flat earther, but I don't think the earth is completely round either. I think it's a torus. But anyway, so I study this stuff very thoroughly. And when you look at the ancient Mayan pyramids and that whole area or whatever, and what we found is, you know, these native people basically moved in, you know, and they were kind of, there was sacrifice, there was bad things going on, but we still don't know exactly who made them, except for maybe we believe that it is the Toltecs and the Moltecs, some kind of giant race that built these. So before they were ever used for sacrifice and bad things, they probably more than likely may have been used for something good. They could have been a temple. They could have been a this or that. And, you know, I lean toward the whole, the further you go back pre-dynastic Egypt, you go pre, you know, Mayan and Aztec, and then you find that there's a completely different world there, and that it was run, the world was run by seemingly giants. Seemingly, it's kind of obvious. It's like there's evidence everywhere.
You know, give the audience an example. In the Middle East, I forget where in the Middle East, but there are these. They're like 60 feet long. They're like 50 tons, 60, 70, 80 tons. It's not slices of slab. It's one whole slab. You know, so it's like they didn't have the technology to build or move those. And people are like, no, those are Roman. No, what the Romans did is they came and built on top of those things. Civilizations have a knack for not rebuilding, but just taking over what's there and adding onto them. And a lot of prehistoric stuff they discovered, you're like, holy mackerel, where did they get the tools and the ability to do this? And to add one final caveat is here in North America, in the United States of America, there were hundreds of catacombs and tombs found of skeletals 7 to 8 to 10 feet. And why do we know this? There are over 200 newspaper reports cataloging, talking about those. Hey, and they discovered this. And every single one of them, the Smithsonian was reported in those papers, newspapers. The Smithsonian is coming in to take a look at this. So what happened is the Smithsonian would take these things back, and that would be the last we ever heard of. And today they go, no, we don't have any of this. Well, then how are there over 200 documented cases where you guys came in to check out the discovery that was made? And we know for a fact that when a museum does not understand something, they will put it in the basement and not show it because they can't explain it. Case in point is the Greek computer that was discovered off a ship that was a couple thousand. It's kind of like some super form of a sextant or something like that.
The Antikythera mechanism?
Yes, yes. And that was in the basement. Some guy saw it, started to mess around. Huh, what is this? And the brilliance of that guy, because when you look at the pictures, it all looks like a crusted coral, you know, and they were figuring it out. So I agree with it. It's funny you say that. Cause, yeah, it's I'm not saying it's giants, but Lucy, you got some explaining to do there, Mr. Archaeology. And archaeologists are the worst of the lot. They don't have proof. They have hypotheses, and they want you to believe their hypotheses. No, that's how it was. You know, when you take engineers and you present them with what the archaeologists say how it was done, most of them will go, no, there's no freaking way it could have been that way. And I first learned that when they did the tree they for the pyramid, building the pyramids, when they said they would use the trees under and roll the blocks. And engineers said, no, those trees would be shredded within a few hundred yards because of the weight of the stone. No,
exactly. It's basic physics here. Like, why are we even dabbling with this concept? This theory is stupid. And it's insulting to our intelligence is what it is.
Exactly. Highly but insulting. What do you think of how they're trying to do revisionist history? I have nothing against Native Americans, but they kind of portray them as one with the Mother Earth, one this like that. They were just as bad as the white man, the black man, the Latino man, the Asian man. I mean, it's like, but they portray them in a certain way. And then when we find these discoveries, they don't want to talk about them. And my take is, we need to learn everything we can from our past. It's just natural curiosity, inclination, and it's always fun to learn, but it's important to learn who we were as past humans. Your thoughts on the revisionist side of it?
Well, when it comes to Native Americans, I mean, me and my wife have done, we made an app years ago that was called The Tribes of the Americas. The Indigenous Tribes of Americas, and it covered from Canada, you know, North America, Mid-America, and South America. We were trying to database a bunch of tribes, and we learned a lot in that process. And we also have a very good Native American friend, shaman friend. He's a Lakota shaman. He's also international recording artist. I used to take care of his website. I used to take care of some of his marketing promotion. And he's a wonderful man, very intelligent. We learned a lot from him. When you sit down and actually talk to the Native people, which I have done many times, then that's when you really start learning stuff. You know, you got to talk to the Native people, and they'll tell you all kinds of things. The first thing they teach you is that, you know, not all the tribes were equal, right? They're not all the same. Not everybody operated the same. And so you have to appreciate that. You have to respect that. And that's, you know, that, like I said, when we did the app, it was a free app too. We didn't make any money off of it. But we did it for the love, and we did it for the Native people, because my wife is Puerto Rican, and she comes from the ancient Taino people in Puerto Rico. And they were pretty much almost all but wiped out. So she's a descendant of probably, you know, kind of in a way, she's one of the last ones. So her and her family lineage, that is. So anyway, so we have a lot to say about Native stuff. You know, it's like there were very savage tribes. But then there were tribes that were a lot more chill and really cool, and there were really interesting ones, you know, like the Hopi and the Zuni and the Anasazi, you know, which the Anasazi just went poof disappeared. And nobody knows why. Where did they go? Where did they go? You know, so it's like...
They fought one another. The Navajos and the Udi were at each other's throats, you know?
The Navajo were pretty, pretty crazy. Like, they were straight up brutal.
Yeah. What society?
Very warlike. Yeah.
What do they think of him? They think of that lady on the lake with the butter. You know? Oh, isn't that a Navajo? So, and it's easy. I wasn't picking on them as they're the easiest example because that's where most of the rebellion has come from. Yeah. But every culture, race, religion has their good and bad. And the reason I bring it up is we can't keep crapping all over America and expect to be the world leader. I say that because once America goes, I think it's going to be a domino effect. All the bad actors will destroy this world. We're like the only thing standing in the way between good versus evil. And we are corrupt and becoming more corrupt. And when we become totally corrupt, we're no better than them. I don't predict good things in the nuclear age. I hate to say it. That's just my heartfelt belief on that. And it irks me that we as people aren't more aware of that, meaning we as citizens who vote these people in. I always joke around, Tony, that we can tell you how big Kim Kardashian's butt is, but we can't tell you squat about the politician who's really that's over. You know? All right. Let's get into our final topic here. Tony, your world, Gaming Wars. So the DEI purge seems to be playing havoc. Is that how you say it? Havoc? Havoc. With the gaming industry, and they don't know how to react to it. All these DEI initiatives, it's given a lot of corporations the impetus to go, let's get rid of it. We were pressured to do this. See, what people don't understand, for example, there's a lot of companies from World War II under Nazi rule that were pro-Nazi because they didn't want to get killed or have the government take over their business. You know, Volkswagen is one of those companies, you know, no different than the DEI programs being pushed and implemented by our government onto these corporations. Well, now a lot of corporations are pulling back on it because we have a new regime in place. But it seems to be creating havoc with your industry. What can you tell us about how these DEI programs, these woke programs, you're independent, so I'm asking you to maybe speculate a little bit, but it's your world. How is the gaming world handling the Trump administration doing away with DEI and trying to obliterate wokeness?
Well, that's definitely my expertise. So I've been following this very hard and paying attention as much as I can. And with Trump and the changes, Grums has been doing a good job of covering this and pointing out the things that matter, you know, and it does seem like we're shifting. We're going to shift. He said it's probably going to take, you know, a few years before we really see huge sweeping changes in the gaming industry, because what it all started with was when COVID happened, then people could work at home. Then they hired all these DEI wokey pokey people, right. And then they flooded in. So for the last 4 or 5 years, that's why they've been making these crap games like Concord and Dragon Age Veilguard, which is an abomination. Right. You know, and so the good news is that the kind of pressure that Grums has been putting out there has been actually kind of making an impact for sure. And of course, the Make Gaming Great Again community and as a whole, everybody's doing a pretty good job of bringing awareness at least to everything, you know, and stuff like that. So it's not just Grums. It's a big group effort, really, is what I always say. It's like there's not just one leader. We're all leaders if we're going to get in this fight. So that's important. I don't want there to be just one person that everybody stares at all the time.
And Grums is a great follower. That's what I followed Grums since he was like at 4,000 or 5,000. And with he's blown up to 250,000.
He's pushing 300K.
He doesn't show his face. There's pictures of him with his face out there, though. But that's his icon and his handle, Zach Grums, for people who want to follow. So do you think that everything's cyclical? Do you truly think we're going to leave the wokeness? I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't see the wokeness leaving Microsoft or Ubisoft. I think Ubisoft will lead the wokeness once Tencent completely takes them over. But I think Microsoft will always have a contingent of career people pushing woke. I think you're always going to have that.
Yes.
But I do think this. The industry of gaming is the one industry where we are battling back. I'd love to see. I'm sorry, people. I don't care if you lose your job, if you're woke, if you're trying to indoctrinate a child that tell him. I don't care if you're transgender. But that's a conversation a high school kid needs to start having. And if they want to lop off their breasts, they want to lop off their whatever, they can do that at 18. I have issues with Dragon Age, the Veil Guard, having quests for transgenders that we know kids are going to play. Am I looking at it wrong? Am I being unfair about that?
No. The Dragon Age Veil Guard was the one that really made me snap. I just lost it over that one. And I said, you know what? I had to be vocal about it. And I didn't want – none of us wanted to bring politics into gaming. They brought politics into gaming. So now here we are. We have to deal with this. And the good – you know, the best thing is when they lose money – and I feel bad for the great, good graphic artists and the people behind the scenes and the coders who are all the innocent people. There's a lot of innocents, a lot of innocent people who lose their jobs and stuff. But, you know, it's we have to continue this fight because otherwise we will wake up one day and every game will be like a Dragon Age Veil Guard. And that game is disgusting. That game is terrible. Like, the way that they forced and the non-binary crap, and then they start talking about it. Like, it's like in the game. It's like in the quest line, and it's just...
Exactly.
I can sit here and scream about it, but I would like to keep my voice at a decent level here. You know, but, you know, I mean, you get very angry about this. But, no, I don't know. There's a lot to talk about. This is one of those things where it's like we could do an entire show on this, right?
Well, it's not just that. It's they also cancel people. The Mark Tominski, creator of the game Lords of the Fallen, he's an actual game developer who was thrown off of Reddit for simply asking, "Hey, you guys want straight people? You want woke? Or you want transgender? What do you want?" And they threw him out because how dare he not just go full blown woke? And you know, despite them doing that,
I heard of that.
They sold 1.3 million copies. He was doing a poll. What was the poll here? He's asking whether they prefer traditional male-female labels or DEI-aligned body type A, body type B. Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember, yeah.
So it's they're canceling people. They did a great job. The cancellation is failed now. And then they get upset when others cancel them. You know what I mean? Not directly canceled, but we're not buying Star Wars Outlaws. They've already started layoffs. One of the UK studios was shut down. Ubisoft, their stock price has tanked. They have a new subsidiary, which is rich in money, rich in ownership, a split between Ubisoft and Tencent. But Ubisoft main is literally dying. It's because of the wokeness. And what people fail to understand is you're the one who was woke. You're the one who condemned us. You're the one who tried to cancel us. You're the one that told us to get the bleep out of here. You don't need us. And now that your games don't sell, now that your games fail, now you want to blame us. So I think the gaming industry is on the right track. I tell my partner, you fight fire with fire, because eventually a rational mind is going to realize, hey, if we try it again, they know how to fight back now. We can't afford that. And it will stop. But if we don't fight back, it's going to get worse and worse and worse. So I applaud the gaming industry. And it's not just that. There's Assassin's Creed Shadows.
Thoughts, oh, yeah.
Your thoughts on... See, to me, it's I'm a Latino. I'm Puerto Rican Panamanian. My grandmother was called the N-word. That's how diverse my family is. My grandmother. You know, my mother looks like a little Asian woman. Our diversity... Right. They don't, Latinos, we're all mutts. And what irked me about Assassin's Creed Shadows, it was the wokeness, the BMI, all this. I don't care whether you're white, black, Latin America, whatever. But Assassin's Creed had a formula that we all love. The protagonist, the hero of the game, was from the area where the game was at. And what people... Y'all know this. Y'all may not want to say it, but there's a lot of animosity between the Asian and the black culture. I've seen that firsthand multiple times. Not closed incidents. There's a general issue. When I tried asking a friend about that, he just got angry. I don't want to talk about it. You know, I don't think he even knew. but it's there. And what I'm leading up to is when Resident Evil 6 had a white guy in Africa killing all Africans, it was an uproar. Brief uproar, but it was an uproar. So how do you think it looked with a black guy where there's cultural issues here who is not a samurai, who Ubisoft is trying to declare as a factual samurai, who blacks and Latinos are always accusing Americans of cultural appropriation? You claim a black man as a samurai. You put him in a feudal system where you've never done that before. It's always been an Italian when it's set in Italy, a Greek when it's set in Greece, an Egyptian when it's set in Egypt. You know, when that formula has followed, now you do this, and then you try to use a woke. And they're not even straight. They have a female ninja. So it's a female ninja, not even a male ninja. So you don't get two heroes. You get the dynamically gay duo of two protagonists, one black, one female, that goes against the whole grain of what you're doing. It has nothing to do with racism as much as it has everything to do with wokeism, cultural appropriation. All the terms that the left throws at us, they're projecting out. And what's forgotten in all this? They don't even get the game right, meaning the historical accuracy. You know, this got so bad that even the Japanese government had a few words of negativity towards Ubisoft to say about this. Now, right. I'm not trying to be unfair. I'm not trying to make it one-sided. I'm basing everything I have done based off of recent history and the gaming history of Assassin's Creed Shadows. It has undersold. That's a reason that this whole issue with Ubisoft and Tencent happened. Your thoughts on Assassin's Creed Shadows, and feel free to disagree with me, as I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying that's kind of how I saw it.
No, everything you said is fine. I will correct you, though. From what I understand, is that Yusuke was an actual – he did exist.
Okay. Yes, he is a historical figure, but he's
real. He's real, but the problem was that they put him in the wrong era. So he was not in the proper era of that.
Well, that was one of the problems, yeah.
Yeah, so it was like that was inaccurate, and then they've got like Chinese assets in the game that is mixed with this like Chinese stuff in Japan world. What are you doing?
From Japan. They hired American historians who were DEI women. Historians.
Yeah, and they should have actually consulted with actual Japanese people or had Japanese people help work on the game, whatever. And they just ignored all of these things. And then, I mean, we've been talking about Assassin's Creed Shadows ad nauseum to the point where I've kind of like, but we've been talking about it in the community for this whole time, and people have done a really good job of covering every facet of it, actually. And
I had three episodes, and that's why Yusuke, I know his whole history is based off of roughly 13 lines in a book,
right?
That are
that's what I learned too. I did, you know, I never knew about any of this stuff. I never, you know, I don't claim to be like a super Japanese expert. There's things I know, and there's a lot that I didn't know. But this whole thing was a learning process for me because I'm like, well. Apparently he was real and everything, but who knows exactly how much of him is made up for the game and all this and that. And then we could just put that aside for a minute. We could let that pass for just a moment. But then when you go and you make him gay and then you make the girl gay, wow. I mean, talk about having an agenda. Talk about just shoving it in our face so hard.
And then
what did you do? What did you accomplish? You just destroyed one of the greatest franchises of all time. Now, I do believe that Assassin's Creed its time is coming to an end because they have milked that franchise into the ground. They have made too many too quickly. And I'm sorry, but that's just the fact of it all. But, I don't know, Grums feels that maybe with Tencent purchasing them, they could see a shift with the next Assassin's Creed, because the reality is if the next Assassin's Creed fails, then the IP is dead, for sure, at that point.
Well,
that's going to be kind of sad in a way, you know, but I'm more worried about what's the future of Ghost Recon. I mean, I love the future.
Rainbow Six.
Right?
Yeah.
I want to know the future of Ghost Recon, because if they go and mess that up, I'm going to freak out. I mean, I love Ghost Recon. They've already ruined Rainbow Six. Rainbow Six is trash. I mean, they made this stupid zombie game. It was like, what is this crap? This is dumb. This is not Rainbow Six, man. That's not what I grew up playing, man. We want tactical shooters. We want a realistic shooter. We want to feel like we're the SWAT team or whatever, you know, or military. Whatever.
I think what Grums is referring to with Tencent is they're a Chinese-based company. They've allowed wokeness to happen with some of their other investments, but if they've never taken it, they've always had pieces of ownership of this, but never calling the shots. And I think what Grums is maybe referring to is the Eastern thought frame of developers is still old school compared to this new Western. And the easiest example is Black Myth Wukong.
Yeah.
When Sweet Baby Inc. tried to get them to hire them for about $6 million, they said, you know, take a hike. And they stayed true to create a great game. Beautiful characters, beautiful environments, make the gameplay top-notch. And I think that's what he's referring to. Tencent will force that back on Ubisoft. When somebody goes, you know, hey, let's make a gay Malaysian woman and put her in Europe, you know, during the Pilgrim era. You know, that'll sell. You know, they're going to go, hold your horses there, little one. You know, go see Human Resources, collect your final check on your way out. You know, that's what's going to happen. You know, and I think that's what Tencent. There's a difference in culture. Being born, raised Panamanian, Puerto Rican, being raised in Panama, I've got three cultures that I was raised with. Mostly Panamanian, but being an American, but I also have a Puerto Rican culture. My Puerto Rican culture is mostly with food, you know, to be quite honest.
I like Puerto Rican food because, you know, my wife's Puerto Rican, and I'll tell you, I love it. I love it. I love it more than Mexican food.
The dirty secret is most Latino and Hispanic culinary dishes, their roots are in Spanish food, Spaniard from Spain. We have the same dishes, but they're all different based off the vegetables we had available to us in the area. So I can make one dish that's the same dish in a Panamanian style versus a Puerto Rican style. The Mexicans, they're the one Latino Spanish Hispanic, whatever, Chicano, whatever culture you want to give him based on what society says, that is completely different from the rest of Central and South America. I don't know why. I never bothered to research it. I wonder maybe if it's a heavy influence or whatnot, but it is completely different food from your traditional Latino food. So any final words, Brother Tony, before we wrap up the podcast?
I don't know. We're going to make gaming great again. We're doing. That's what we're working on. I'm proud to say that, you know, I'm, like I said earlier, I'm working with a team of based game devs, and we're going to try to release a game that is going to be what people want, right? We're going to set the stage. And of course with our games that we already we've done, you know, there's obviously no wokey stuff in it or anything like that, but, we're just going to continue, you know, the only thing we can do is keep trying to remind people what gaming was, you know, like look at retro games, you know, this is how we're going to make gaming great again, right? We got to take it back to that, to the love, the passion.
Exactly.
That was the end making these games. And it was about creating escapism and not injecting all kinds of hardcore political agendas into it.
Exactly. That's the escape. That's the best word to use.
Escapism. Yeah.
And so for the audience, they can find some of your work or more about you at shadowinkdesigns.com, correct?
Yes.
All right.
And X. I try to be active on X and everything. Yeah.
X, you can find him at shadowinkdesign. Yeah. At X. And with that, Tony, thank you for coming on. I hope to have you on again, maybe to get your review, get your thoughts on some current games. Are you playing any games at the moment?
Oh, yeah, actually, Cryptic Havoc, he's our game dev friend, and he is he's a Conan Exiles expert. So I was like, yeah, I want to jump on with you. He started a server, so I was like, this is pretty cool. And I haven't played an online game in a long time, so it's been kind of fun to play with him and his wife and a friend of ours named Hollow. So that's kind of what I've been playing. I bought a bunch of PS2 games the other day. I bought a bunch of Tom Clancy games, right? I bought some old Ghost Recon. I bought SOCOM 1, 2, and 3. So I've just been having fun in my free time and when I do have time to play I go and I actually, I know it sounds crazy, I turn on my PlayStation 2. I find myself playing PS2 games, you know, it's really wild. I never thought I'd care about playing PS2 again, but so I've been enjoying it.
Yeah. So I still have an Xbox, PlayStation 2, the GameCube, and I have games. When I retire, I'm going to fire them up and play them just for the enjoyment of escapism. Right now, I don't play too much. I'll play maybe over the last few weeks, I can count maybe I played 3 hours worth of gaming. But I have Silent Hill 2, the remake. Very scary game the original was when it came out. And that's the other one that I'm playing. And I hope to have you back again, brother. And to the audience, do not forget, you can find this podcast and others like it at grumblingsmedia.com. Bookmark it, grumblingsmedia.com. You can find us at Rumble, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Pandora at Grumblings, or with the profile Grumblings Media. Do not forget to like and share this podcast. Our growth is truly dependent on that. And Tony, once again, thank you for coming on. And to everybody else, this is William Del Pilar for the Red, White, and Rude. And until next week, I bid you adieu.